CliffCentral.com.
Hi there. This, as you heard, Cliff Central on Beyond Ears and Eyes. I'm Shemaine Harris, and next to me is Phalisa Mabuya. How's it, baby?
Hello.
Awesome.
Also in studio is, of course, me, Liesl Tom. Welcome to Beyond Ears and Eyes.
You're sounding like I was supposed to say something.
No, Shemaine. Welcome to Beyond Ears and Eyes. Today we have two guests for you. We are talking about what happens when we die, near-death experience. We've all heard stories of what happens when you die, and Shemaine and I thought it would be interesting
to go there before we get there.
love it, friend. So with us in studio is Penny Wheeler, who is an expert in this matter. She studied, let me try this, please say that word, Penny.
Thanatology,
and that is...
With a th, not an F.
No.
Well, Penny said it depends. If you're from Pretoria, no.
I couldn't help. It's,
Penny, what is thanatology?
It's the study of death and dying, so it's a science that they've had to... that they've introduced, but it's very new in South Africa. We tend to just go the death and bereavement route, not actually the science of death and dying.
And how on earth did you get into this?
Sure. I went to a church conference and wasn't very happy with what they threw down my throat and felt that I needed a more wider idea of what happens out there. So I Googled it, the death and dying, and thanatology came up. And there was a course offered in the UK, and I registered and did it.
So when someone says science, it's substantiated. Now, I mean, really?
This is a special science. A lot of belief has to go into this thing.
And, okay.
You get ridiculed quite a lot when you talk about this field. But they do try and have a balanced perspective. So they do look at the positives and the negatives and try and bring everything in.
I'm sorry, I'm having the giggle. Because let me just say what I'm seeing. I'm looking at Penny, and she looks so calm and so... fragile, and I'm thinking, how do you deal with ridicule? You know, because it looks like, you know, butter can't melt in your mouth.
No, well, I believe what I believe, and okay. I stand firm, you know, with those things. So people can tell me what I believe is a bunch of rubbish, but then I can say the same to them too. So okay. don't slam anybody down, basically. Mm-hmm.
And Penny, you have not only seen people dying, but you've also had people come back after near-death experiences with their stories.
I've heard one of a gentleman who had heart failure. Don't look at me like
this. Asking.
A bit creeped out, eh?
She's totally creeped out.
Yeah, so I think the ICU ward sisters will give us a good idea of what's going on. People die, clinical death, and then they are resuscitated. And unfortunately, we laugh at these people's stories and tell them that must be the pain medication, you're on a trip, you know, you're just trying to get attention to yourself. But yeah, a lot of it is true. Mm-hmm. They have, through the studies, found common features that these people go through.
You say a lot of it is true. Isn't all of it true?
Well, I believe all of it is true.
Okay. Mm.
But you've got to leave that little gap open so that people think you listen to them.
You have just outed yourself.
Okay, you're cynical. Good. Welcome to the party.
Well, Shemaine, we also have a guest on the line via Skype, Karen Skitter.
Uh-huh.
Hi, Karen.
Good afternoon, ladies.
How you doing?
Hi, Karen.
I'm great, and you guys?
Uh-huh.
Good, thank you. Now, Shemaine, Karen has had four experiences where she almost crossed over. Karen, won't you tell us your story, please?
Okay. Basically, what happened was four times I was not breathing and I had to be resuscitated. Should I go into detail now?
Yeah, yes, but, you know, please. Other than okay. The fact that you, because you sound like an expert. You sound like a crossing over expert four times.
But in a good way. I was clinging on to the living.
Okay,
the first time I was involved in a house fire, and I was found in the bathtub and dragged outside where I was clinically dead, and they had to resuscitate me. and then I was airlifted to hospital. That was about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Then what happened was I got really involved with alcohol and sleeping tablets. So I went the whole addiction route. And what happened was that the 3 times after that, I basically OD'd and was resuscitated in ICU for those 3 times.
So what happened during, because you're saying you were resuscitated, and what we want to know is what happened during the time that you were out? Where were you? Were you out of your body? What was your out-of-body experience?
We hear these stories about a light, you know, people going to the light. Did you go to the light?
Yeah.
You know what? I wish I could say I went into the light because I didn't. I don't think you want to be brought back when you did go into the light. But I'm very glad I didn't because I got to make things right. What happened to me was exactly the opposite. When I was in the fire, I was basically in a coma for 2 days. I suffered heavy smoke inhalation. And I believe that God took me on a journey through hell, or the hell that my life would become if I kept on with my addiction. So I had quite a horrific 2 days, terrible experiences. I was accused of murder. I was tortured, all kinds of things. And it was visions that were shown to me, and it was so real. Now, I'm a cynic at best. I never believed in this. I never believed in, I mean, my basic knowledge is, you know, Supernatural, the TV show, and that was it. So it was very scary for me.
So you experienced this as you would in this body that you have now, during those 2 days while you were out?
No, I was out of my body. I saw it happening to me, but I was not in my body. It was like a movie show.
So
it was definitely, it could not have been a dream.
No, and it was definitely not pain medication.
Or hallucinations.
As Penny said, normally that's what people say it is. You know, you've been on a morphine trip or something, and it wasn't. It was completely different. My mum, who was at my hospital bed the whole time, said to me that the times that I did regain consciousness, she never saw anybody with so much terror in their eyes. I couldn't speak anything, but I was awake for a minute or two, and then I slipped back. And then I had another vision of something very bad happening to me. So it was really,
really
scary.
Do you want to speak about this? There's something.
Sorry?
Do you want to speak about the something bad that happened? Or not? You choose. You don't have to.
I can just basically elaborate. It was, as I said, it was like visions being shown to me. I was stuck in hell, and it was, you know, visions or where I was being tortured. I saw myself being tortured.
So when you speak of hell, we normally traditionally think fire, brimstone, burning pit, people saying, water!
No, this was more like demons doing this to me, people doing this to me, not people, but beings. So it was scary. It was really scary. This was not, as I said, I was not a firm believer. I was not anything at that stage. So this was, you know, completely out of my league. I never, you know, did the horror movie thing or read books or stuff that I could compare it or say that this was my subconscious coming out. It was just incredibly real. Can I just elaborate a little bit on what happened during the fire?
Yes, please. Because I also do wonder, when you say when they're doing it to you, what were they doing? Were they scratching you? Were they poking you?
They were torturing me. It was like being really tortured.
Biting? What do you know about?
Yeah, you know, it's like almost, if I can compare it to medieval times, you know, when you get tortured with the rack and that kind of thing, it's like you can feel the pain. You can feel you're being, you know, assaulted, but there's nothing actually on your physical body. You know, I sustained no injuries. You know, I had no injuries on me after those 2 days.
Okay, go to the fire.
That was weird. So during the fire, what happened was I had a home phone, a telecom phone. And around about the time I lost consciousness, the phone rang in my mum's house, who was 2 hours away, and it registered on her cell phone as my home phone. So she answered the call expecting me, and it was a person or somebody talking gibberish. She couldn't make out what was going on. So she put the phone down and she called me back. Obviously there was no answer, because by that time the living room was burnt beyond recognition, so the home phone was not working. It was burnt. 5 minutes later, the neighbor, who never met me in my life, showed up at the door and asking her that she had this intense feeling to pray for me. So she wanted to pray with my mum for me. And they actually did pray for me. This was a time round about when I physically died, when I stopped breathing. So this was some kind of divine intervention. What it was, I really don't know. But that's what happened while I was, basically when I died.
Karen.
And that was 2 hours away. And they had no idea I was in a fire at that stage.
Sure. How do you make sense of that phone call? What do you think happened?
Okay, basically what happened is 3 days later, I woke up on the third day, and on the fourth day I was discharged. The only thing I suffered was smoke inhalation. On the fourth day then, when I got home, I was lying on my bed, and you know, you're quite a bit traumatized, and I was trying to make sense of it all, and I felt this immense feeling of peace, and just, you know, I could feel light washing over my body, and I immediately sensed it was the presence of an angel, and immediately it triggered back to a memory for me when I was in the bathtub being shielded by the wings of an angel. Now, the bathroom where I was found, the ceiling, everything was already on fire, and it started caving in. Yet I did not sustain one wound on my body at all.
Do you think that was your guardian angel?
Yeah, definitely. So yes, and I can take this through to the other 3 times, when I woke up afterwards, after my OD, that I could feel that presence. And it's just something that you can't describe to anybody. It's just amazing. It's warm. It's loving. It's peace.
Okay.
It's
okay. Great. Because I wanted to hear whether you had one of those during one of your passings.
And did you? You know,
good experience. You know,
we normally hear about loved ones coming to meet you at this tunnel of light. Did you see anyone apart from your angel that you recognized or sense were long past relatives?
No long past relatives, no. The only person I saw during that 2 days in ICU when during the fire was that my ex-fiance at that stage ended up dead in one of my visions. And 2 years ago, he actually died. So this was like a premonition of what was to come.
Okay, so a glimpse into the future.
Yes.
Okay.
But no loved ones. As I said, my first experience was not a very nice experience.
Okay.
I was obviously being told where I was destined to go. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so.
No bright lights, no pearly gates.
All right, so no pearly gate, no hands stretched out to you, no Peter at, you know, making bad jokes at the gates of heaven, none of that.
Unfortunately, not.
I mean, it sounds like I'm taking the mickey, but I'm actually quite serious, you know, because you know how we talk. We talk about this
exactly,
as in, yeah, you know, it's nonsense, but, you know, is it?
Please get me right. I mean, I come from the legal fraternity. I'm a skeptic at best. I'm a cynic. Since I entered recovery, I'm a big Christian. God took me through my recovery. He saved my life during addiction. I mean, dying 4 times is something that not every person gets.
Like I said, you're an expert at dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I would also take the mickey out of me. So don't worry about it.
I suppose we make fun when we need to understand things, eh?
Exactly. And I mean, it's an uncomfortable subject. It's not something that you can really talk to, you know, and making dinner conversation.
Penny, why is
going to look at you.
I just want to hear from Penny while we're on the line. If you have questions for her, please ask her. But Penny, why is it such a shameful thing to admit that you've had a near-death experience, and He saw angels. And I mean, the thing Karen said was angels and the wings and all. I'm thinking, why do all angels have wings? You know, what's up with the wings?
Well, I think we all sound weird. I mean, who sees fairies and angels? They all think that we're taking something and tripping, basically. Mm-hmm. So people aren't willing to listen to people who have these real stories. And because it's not fact-based, we have to go by what people tell us. Mm. And we have to actually, there has to be some sort of faith or element of belief in this. You know, and people do look at us very strangely.
Penny, while Karen was talking, you were nodding your head. Which resonated or which parts of the story correlate with what you have studied?
All right. So basically, most of our NDEs that have been studied have positive outcomes. They the angels, the pearly gates, and Peter waiting there for you, and they're all good and rosy and lovely and butterfly.
You're opening yourself up,
and
yeah.
That's most of them. However, they say one in every five has a negative outcome, and there are three different types here, and Karen does fall into the one. So the first type is the people just. They're not ready to die, so they sort of enter this horrible world and they get snatched back quite quickly. Mm-hmm. The second load of people, they end up in a featureless void where they have these voices yelling at them and screaming at them and telling them, this is all that there is for you for the rest of eternity. And then the final one is very much where Karen was, where it's a lot of torture, screaming, pain. It's just a horrible place to be. So, and the only way you get out of there is by actually pleading for help, and it's when you plead for this help that's by some divine or by some intervention that you get pulled out of this negative space and brought back to this side. And the reason for that is to teach you a lesson, to teach you best you change your ways. And I think Karen got that.
Yes.
Karen, now did you ask to come back, or did someone tell you, look, your work isn't done, or we are granting you this opportunity to rectify things?
You get immunity.
I didn't grasp it at that time, no. It was only after the last time, which was 2 years ago, that I had this immense feeling of, you know what, this is your last chance. Aww. If you bugger up this again, you know, there's no more immunity idol for you. So that was a very distinct feeling I got, and that's what finally got me to go and ask for help and enter into recovery.
You are a slow learner, it seems.
It seems that way.
So we've got Dr. Death here. Do you want to ask her anything?
Yeah.
Ask her.
First of all, I mean, I'm kind of relieved because this is not a story I shared before. So, and I didn't really much go into the investigation part of this. So, I'm quite relieved that somebody else had this experience as well, that I can fall into a category. So, my question is, do you think that my mum and this lady being basically asked by some presence to intervene or intercede on my behalf was what saved my life?
Possibly, yes. There's no definite answer here again, but are they believers, your mum and this lady?
Yes.
Yes. So very much so. And are they open to the spiritual world?
No, not my mum is hearing about that.
Yeah.
But I guess, yes, in a way.
I suppose also the fact that your mum agreed to the prayer, you know, she opened herself up to, you know, to helping and healing and, you know, because if you give permission, you know, and I do believe we can pray for one another and there'll be assistance.
Most definitely. Yes, you know. And that's again, I mean, even if you're in the bottom pits of hell, if you ask for help, you will get it, you know. And a lot of these people who end up in what I think we call it purgatory, it's sort of one of the astral realms.
That's the void. Yeah. That's where you go sit for 120 years.
Well, there's no documented sort of proof that that's where you sit for eternity or whatever. They do say that, what the spirits say, and these come through mediums, that if you do ask for forgiveness and you do ask for help, that you do get the help that you need. So I do believe the earthly beings, if we do ask the spirits out there, that we will get to the help that we need. But you got to buy into it, though.
I want to ask you something about that, but before I do, let me just tell you that you are listening to Beyond Ears and Eyes on Cliff Central. And if you would like to join in our conversation, if you have a question for Karen, who's had four near-death experiences, or for Penny, who is an expert in guiding people through who are dying and have studied this, mm-hmm. why don't you send us a WhatsApp on 079-748-2090. Now, Penny, does your belief system play a role in what you find once you die or almost die, you know, once you reach that threshold?
Sure, that's difficult because it's different for every different religion. So I am a Christian and I do practice from the space, but I don't preach it. So I do believe that there is divine intervention, and I do believe that there is an everlasting life out there for me, and it's going to be good. Mm-hmm. And I suppose for every good, there's got to be bad, so the yin and the yang. So the hell must be there to balance it out. We can't all be butterflies.
Yeah. So talk to us about thanatology. Hala. I've got a new word.
Well done.
Thanatology. you're doing, that's the study of death, dying, and everything that goes with it, bereavement.
Not
and
rebirth.
So.
No, unfortunately not.
Okay. So death is a rebirth.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, so, or not. Am I trying to be fancy now?
It depends on what you believe.
All right. So, how do you deal with families? Because death is still one of the most traumatic things we experience. Mm. I mean, it's one of the things you just don't get over, depending on how close whomever it was to you. So, what is this thing that we need to realize about death and how it ties in with our lives?
Well, the biggest challenge for me as a bereavement counselor is the grief and the guilt that people are feeling. The guilt is something huge. So if you can say goodbye and you can make amends, do so while you're still alive. Because if you left behind and you've let someone go without saying goodbye, you're going to have a hell of a battle. That's the biggest obstacle, actually. And many other things, yeah. I mean, the people aren't afraid of actually dying. They're afraid of the pain. That's the thing.
Yes.
It's not the death itself. It's the pain. They're so scared they're going to die. And, I mean, if I had to ask...
It's going to be horribly painful.
Yeah, well, if I had to ask you, how do you want to go?
Peacefully, my sleep.
There we go.
I was actually thinking the person's remaining behind their pain. Because, you know, that for me is kind of like the most traumatic thing. The fact that the person left, they left. Uh-huh. But the fact that you here on this earth, that's how I experience death. Mm. I'm sitting here with that horrible low feeling of you've gone. Now I've made it a little easier these days where I go, I just can't see them because of that veil that's between the two worlds, but we're still in one another's space, but they can get to me, but because of my vibration or where I'm at, I can't get to them. So that's the only way I can make sense, is to know that they're not there. But it formed at a cerebral level, not a heart. And then the heart was like, oh, okay, then it's not so bad.
So you've got to reinvent yourself. So if you've lost your spouse, you're now going to be a widow. So you have a new identity. And with that comes a whole lot of other jobs that you've got to do. So if you've lost a parent, you could be an orphan. So with that comes new labels and new jobs and new tasks. And that's where grief counseling will come in and help you put things into place. I think a visit from the other side is a special gift. And if you're open to it, I mean, how amazing is that to get that person back just to say, hello, I'm here, I'm checking up on you. Mm. And they do that, but you've got to be open to it. If you don't believe in it, there's no way they're going to come visit you. Or they do, and you just don't see it. Mm. You know.
Karen, you mentioned the trauma. Have you dealt with that trauma?
Sure. I think most of it through... I did the Narcotics Anonymous 12-step program. So you deal with the trauma and you deal with the shame and the guilt and whatever you caused, because you still feel this, you know, your fault. It was not, you know, especially the overdoses. It's not something that, you know, it was an accident or something. So I think a big part of the trauma, to put it like that, it will be the shame and guilt that you caused your loved ones to go through this with you.
When you say it wasn't an accident, the overdose, is that what most people who go there feel, that it wasn't an accident?
for me, do you mean
the overdosing?
No, I mean that's deliberate. I think the moment you choose to pick up substances that can cause you to die, you cannot say it's an accident anymore. Wow. You made that choice from the beginning.
That's very candid. That's very brave.
There's lots of therapy.
Lots of therapy. Okay.
That's what's so amazing about the 12-step program. Look, for any recovering addict, we'll tell you that we cannot make excuses ever again in our lives. So to say that it was an accident or to blame it on anybody else would just be the coward's way out.
Penny, I want to ask you, the research done and in your own work also, people who have had near-death experiences, and I've heard this, so I want you to tell me if I'm right or wrong or somewhere in the ballpark, is that people who have the light and the loved ones coming to embrace them, they find it extremely traumatic to come back to this realm or this plane.
Mm. They do. And those that have been studied report that it's actually almost like a forceful voice, and Karen had that too, that says you've got to get back. You know, you've got to go and fix up, and this is your last time. And you've got a job to do. You haven't. And they actually tell them, you're not finished. It's not your time. You've got to go back. And it's forceful. And some of the people say they didn't want to come back. It was just way too cushy. There's a story of a man who was shot in Vietnam. And he was suffering terribly, and he just thought, oh, no more pain. I'd like this. And they sent him right back into his painful body, and he had lots to do, and he did. He went and became a minister and did quite wonderful deeds with his life. Yeah.
Mm. As Karen was describing the first time she was in this horrible state, I almost had this mental image of Scrooge in you know, A Christmas Tale, going from place to place and looking at what the future might be.
Yeah, and that's a scary place to be. And they do. They go through this and they see terrible things. And things are done to them. They don't feel it physically, but you will feel the, you know, when you see somebody else getting hurt and you can feel that out yourself, that's what they're feeling. Not that you're hurt.
I heard a story of this man, I think we talked about it a little earlier, off air, who, he died, he was met by people, he did the whole transition, you know, like, oh, you know, I don't think he's, yeah, but he didn't see a light, so I think your key is if you don't see a light, turn back.
Okay, Karen, did you hear that? Next time, if you don't see a light, turn back.
Oh, I'm being irreverent here. But anyway, so this guy was met by benevolent beings. Are you snorting from laughter?
Yes.
Oh, good. You're having fun. So this man walked, you know, his welcoming committee said, hi, hi. They all knew him. He felt safe. They said, no, we're going to go for a walk. Took him for a walk. The further he got from wherever, they started to, you know, to touch him and prod him and poke him and, you know, do stuff to him. And he said it became increasingly uncomfortable, screaming at him, you know, yapping at him. And basically what you said, Penny, they told him, this is useless, this nothing. What you
this
want?
Is it.
This is it. What you want? And he... Somehow, he said he saw Jesus. Now, okay, everybody, we all see spirituality in different ways. He says he saw Jesus. He believes it was Jesus who said, you need to ask for help. And then he said, the minute I asked for help, those beings fell away. But apparently they fell away with fear and terror.
The big boss had spoken, huh?
Yeah. And then he came back to his body. He's a changed man, of course.
Yes, yeah.
You know, who wouldn't be if you, you know.
Yeah, everybody who has a near-death experience comes back differently. None of them can pick up life normally. They see life totally differently. Those things that we would take for granted, they see it totally differently. And they do try and change life and the way they have lived. So I don't know if he was very naughty.
Yeah, you know, he was. He had an addictive personality. Now, when I say that, you know, we have different types of addictions, but he was, you know, he's doing like drugs and so. So I'm not sure whether there's a special hell for drugs. Because it seems that those are the people who suffer most. I think the alcoholics, they go like, it was, dude, it was dope. Loved it, didn't want to come back. So I think we need to choose our poison. But besides that, they say you come back and you are filled with love for others and earth and beings.
Mm. Oh, and you do want to make a change, a positive change.
That's very true.
Is that because you kind of have the sense that you were given a last chance or are somehow special or something?
I think that you've seen what can happen, and nobody really wants that. And also now you've been told, go back and make a change. Mm. That's why you're being sent back. Otherwise, we'll keep you here.
But why, I mean, why don't we all make a change? Why would you need a NDE to, you know, to do why you are here?
Mm, well, why do we need traffic cops out there to tell us what we must do? We're doing, and we know we have to do it. So, policemen out there.
Good question.
What do you think, Karen?
Well, for me, it was definitely, you know, it was given on four opportunities. Mm-hmm. That, as you know, being the slow learner that I am, to turn my life around. But it was that exact same feeling I got, was that, listen, this is it. Learn your lesson now and change your life. And I did. I left the legal profession. I started doing addiction counseling now, wow, helping other people. And I feel that's the purpose that God has planned for me.
So how do you feel about...
Yes, my whole life changed.
How do you feel about death now? How afraid or not afraid are you? And what do you say to people who are afraid of dying? Because we think this is it, this is the end of it.
Mm. I'm not afraid of death at all. Because, you know, I'm rooting for the good guys now. But no, it's just that I've been there, and the peace I felt with the being or the angel or whatever it was, it's just an amazing feeling. I cannot think that you would want to come back here. As Benny said, you know, it's once you're exposed to that. So I'm not afraid at all.
Mm. And that's common with all NDEs. They are not afraid of death at all. They'll happily go on. There is no pain.
Penny, what does the research say about different religions? I mean, obviously within this framework, Karen is a Christian, you're a Christian, so you kind of have the same framework, but what about someone who is a Buddhist?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's again very philosophical. So what is your reality might not be mine. So my beautiful is something different to yours, but I think peace remains peace. So they might see paradise as something totally different. The research doesn't show that there's a discrepancy between the NDE sort of patterns or behavior or reports across any cultures or across any religions. They all go through exactly the same steps. So basically they have this sort of outer body experience. They can see their body there, but it's sort of like a discarded garment. They then report tunnels or doors which they can go through. And then they all report that somebody says to them, go back, you haven't finished, you've got to do your job. So that's all the same. It doesn't change at all across religion.
And I've heard, and someone mentioned it to me while we were looking for someone to come speak to us about this, that he had a very close call with death, almost in a fatal accident. And in that moment, when he resigned himself to the fact that he was going to die, he saw his life flash past. You know, in front of his eyes. So I refer to that as a highlights reel. Does everybody get that?
Not all of them, but it is the majority. They do see their life go past them, and then they do see the good moments and the bad moments as they go. So hell, I think, would be the bad moment highlight. And going the good road would have been all your highlights in life.
Okay. Oh, wait, did you just say if you're going to the dark place, you see all the bad things you've
done? I would think so. That would make more sense to me, because I don't know how you would feel that inner peace if you saw all your traumatic events. You know, what they've said is they just do see their life flash past them. So I think, well, if you've had a good fright, I don't think the first thing you think of is all the bad things that you've done. We think of all the happy things.
Mm. And apparently there are some people who get a choice. Who actually they go... Sure, you can stay or you can go. You have a choice. So I have heard of people who got choices.
Yeah.
And they chose to come back. Yeah. And hence, obviously, they chose to come back. Yeah. That's why they could tell the story. Yeah. Hello, Shemaine.
Again, the ones with the negative, they are people who didn't want to die. And they then just say, please just send me back again. You know, that type of thing. Yeah. No, that has been documented.
But there hasn't been any documentation documented cases where they went to the light?
No, and said, no. They generally, most of them have been told, go back. Because then you go. I mean, mm-hmm. It's your time.
So, I don't know, if heaven rejects you, I mean, where do you go?
They just post you back to clean up, and it's so that you can come round second round, you know.
Clean up. I can understand that. But, I mean, because we do look at death as ultimate. But it's not ultimate. Just like this here now is not ultimate. It's a moment, you know. So with all that you've learned, how do you feel about death, Penny?
I just don't want to have pain, basically. That's my biggest worry. I'm ready to go. I know where I'm going. My soul is sorted. I, not just a Christian, but I do believe in spirituality, and I do believe there's much more out there than just this. And the strange thing is, the skeptics are the ones who tell us that we're not the only beings in the universe and all of this nonsense, but they don't think of the spiritual realm. And it definitely is quite strong out there.
When you think of hell, what comes to mind?
Horrible, horrible, hot place that I never even want to see. I don't even want to visit it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a place where... But you know, it's good for me there in all this research is that you can get yourself out. It's not that you're stuck there forever, that you're taught in Sunday school. If you're naughty, that's where you're going to go for eternity.
That's my problem with this concept of hell, because it's used to scare children into behaving.
Yeah.
And adults.
Yeah. And adults. Quite a few. But at least you can get yourself out of there. So there's always the good news is there, that there is greatness out there for you. You've just got to actually be able to say, I'm the bad one and I need to be forgiven for what I've done.
No, Shemaine, when I say they scare children with it, I mean they start young. Mm-hmm. And children are so much more susceptible to fear and to imagining this horrible place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, definitely. They live in imagination world, basically. Hey, if you think of the cartoons and all of that. And they do believe that they are going to a horrible, horrible place.
Uh-huh. And that's unkind. Visualize it. I mean, that's what freaked me out as a child. Mm. Is trying to imagine this horrible place if I don't do what people tell me to do.
Mm. And you don't have to be a Christian or a believer as long as you're spiritual. So that when you're there and you're in this horrid spot, you can say, look, I've done wrong. I've lived a bad life. I'd like to do better.
Yeah. I like that you're not judgmental, you know, because let's take off the gloves. Judgmental things, you know, the minute people become rigid in their faith, you know, when it becomes a religion.
Do as I say or you go to hell. That kind
you know, you approach. Yeah, you get pointed at. And, you know, I prefer the ones where they go like, you know what? We all equal. We all have equal standing. As far as what you do with your life, you get to choose. I get to choose, obviously within reason or within what the powers that be say. You know, because, you know.
Grief is universal.
So, I like
religion.
That you don't. No. Judge.
You can't. I could never do this job if I had a judge. I mean, grief is grief. It's a human emotion that you feel. Doesn't matter what you are, an atheist, an agnostic, a Hindu, a Muslim, doesn't really actually matter. We feel the same.
What's the worst case you ever came across?
I would think it's a mother whose child has committed suicide.
Oof.
Because that blame is just, you can't fix it. You're supposed to outlive your child. And these mummies, or fathers, let's not just go with mothers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Parents who've lost their child to suicide, where they should have seen the warning signs and they should have helped and they couldn't. You know, they just, I think that's the worst.
We should have.
Should have, would have, could have. Eh? Mm. And there's just no out for that. Suicide is a decision that person has made and they are really in a very bad space for them to go that far. Mm. And I think that's the worst.
What do you say to these people who are sitting with that?
Time. They've just got to talk and remember the good times. My favorite is to go and get the photo album because we don't take pictures of bad times. We take pictures of good times and just relive that person's life and bring, you know, breathe in the happiness that they brought into your lives. Don't remember this ugly part. It's just a small moment. It's a big moment, but it's a small part of that person's life.
Karen, do you...
Karen.
Do you get nightmares or any flashbacks of your time in what you said to me was hell?
Do I still get it?
Do you get flashbacks or nightmares?
I do. Not often, but and I think it's a good thing. It's not when I'm dreaming or sleeping. I will just, you know, get a sudden flashback. I mean, when I spoke about it now, you know, you get flashbacks and you remember. And what I mostly remember is that feeling, that utter helplessness, that utter fear, terror. Mm. And sure, it's not a nice feeling at all. So, yes, I do get it, but I got the positive side. Mm. I got to feel that amazing healing presence, mm. and that's what I strive towards, is to feel that.
Mm. Well, those pictures should become dimmer for you. I mean, they shouldn't be as yes. real. Yes. That's with any trauma. You do remember your event very vividly, but it sort of gets duller around the edges the older you get as time goes by.
Yeah. Yes.
Definitely.
Okay, we're speaking about near-death experience on Beyond Ears and Eyes on Cliff Central. And on the line, we've got Karen, and then in the studio, we've got Penny. And, so Liesl?
Sure. Karen, the 3 times when you overdosed, were they all the same? Did you have the same experience, or were they 3 very distinct experiences?
Strangely enough, it was not as intense as the first time. I didn't really experience the torture. What I do remember is that feeling of crying out. I think Penny put it in perspective, begging for another chance. I never really thought about it that way. But it was that sheer panic. Good. I want to go back. I want to fix this. I want to make it right, please.
Oh, you got some free counseling on Beyond Ears and Eyes, it sounds like. Oh, wow. So, I don't know. I was going to go somewhere now, but that thought left. that thought left.
Penny, we really struggled to get someone to come share their experience with us. And Karen, I really again want to thank you for being so frank and open. Penny, why do people not want to speak about this? I mean, you've touched on being ridiculed, but it has to be more than that. I mean, we get people on the show who get ridiculed for their views all the time, but this time it was really, is it because it's so intensely private? What is the story here?
I think the first person you're going to tell is probably your doctor, who will then tell you, no, actually, you know what, it must have been the pills, you're hallucinating, it couldn't have been, you know, that type of thing. And it's again, it's not a science. So if you talk to people about this, they're going to poo-poo it off and say it's nonsense. Mm. You know, so, but I did say prior to the program that hallucinations, these are one of the excuses, but what we need to know is hallucinations are very personal. So you will see it from your own perspective. However, NDEs have set sort of criteria almost to meet. So there are set things that have to happen in an NDE, and you can't just make
Which
it
are?
Up. So basically all of them, it's the outer body experience. So you've left your body. You can actually see people working on you. Mm-hmm. You can hear the panic. And the spirit itself says, or the person says, that they want to get back and they want to tell the people, actually, I'm okay. You know, I'm fine. But they cannot get there. Then they talk of either doors or tunnels. Lights are lights. And that somebody is there to accompany you. Usually it's a past family member or a good friend, somebody you know. So those are all ticky boxes things. Mm-hmm. And then again, this being who tells you, go back.
The voice.
In a very gentle but very firm
manner. Well, the way you said it, I'm afraid.
Move it.
Karen, so did you, when you woke up, especially the first time, but also after the other 3 times, did you tell anyone about what you just been through?
I did mention it to the doctor, and I spoke to my mum about it. And yes, the standard response was it was probably pain medication or morphine or something.
And how did that make you feel?
At the time, it would have been, you know, you were on a trip anyway, so. But, I mean, I didn't use acid or anything, so I didn't know how to trip.
That was a legal trip.
but how does it make you feel?
Made of skepticism. So you shut it down. Hmm. You do not talk about it.
And then there's also the other thing that I believe people who go and are told to come back, those who are chronically or acutely ill or have, like, you know, like this one woman I'm thinking of now, Anita Murajani, I think that's her name. But anyway, she came back and she got healed from cancer in a matter of days. So, You're pulling a face, goodness, Penny.
Yeah. That's when everybody says, you see, I told you, it's a lot of nonsense.
I know, but I mean, you can't dispute. That, again, was her experience, and she has backup and, you know, all that, and she saw all those things that you mentioned, you know, doctors trying to resuscitate her, trying to tell her husband, but she's here, you know, and then she comes back and her healing, but she was also told, you have to, you know, go back. And she, or did she get the choice? Okay, I have to go back there. But she came back and she healed, and she's telling her story these days, you know, to loads of people.
Well, that's a new and some and a new avenue, something else that somebody's got to listen to and pay attention to. There's no definite answer here at all. You've got to either buy in on it or you don't. You can't convince people. Because when you try, and you try too hard, it looks like you're the one who's struggling.
you need some accommodation somewhere where they give pills, where you can go on legal trips, Corin. So, another friend of mine had this experience, and I'm asking that because I want to find out how that relates to near death. She really nearly died. So she went tripping. She was like, I went there, and I went there, and I saw them, and
in a very short space of time,
in a very short space, but she was like, it was the most incredible things. She said she went to different worlds, basically, and she was just chilling there in those different worlds. But her body was, she was alive. So how can you call that a near-death experience? Or can you just go like, you know, you just went to a different hospital?
Well, did she come out changed?
Yes. I mean, you must come out changed. You found yourself the platter. And you got to after.
So if something good comes out of all this near-death experience thing, whether the skeptics say it's a bunch of nonsense or the believers say it is, if there's change and beauty that comes out of this, then what harm has been done?
So would that be the final tick box for you? Did you come out changed?
Yes, I would say so, yeah. Okay. So that's all what spirituality is about. It's how much good you can spread out there.
Karen, did you come out changed?
Absolutely. As I said, my whole life changed because of that.
And in the way you deal with people, your personality, did that change?
Oh, yes. The legal bitch is gone. No, as I said, you know, especially now with the counseling and stuff, I see people these days for being human beings and I'm not out going out to hurt anybody anymore. And I don't know, it's just your whole philosophy about life change, and you make the most of every minute.
But don't you just love yourself for that, though? Don't you love yourself more now that you've now that you're seeing other people's humanity?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That you've blessed other people as well.
Yeah, that you know that it's a good thing, you know, that you changed.
I think that's the main thing for my NDE, as you guys call it, is that you get to live your purpose. And if your purpose is, and I think all of our purposes are to bless other people.
The other thing I want, did you want to say something?
You go first.
I wanted to find out. I can't remember whether you said you saw your body. Did you see your body?
I saw myself being tortured.
Okay. So because I'm trying to figure out whether you saw your body, you know, like
lying
you
in the hospital bed.
Yeah, like Penny was saying, it's like a garment that's been. I love that. It's beautiful. You know, in my head it goes like it's like a garment that you just took Sheet off and it's lying there. So did you see a body like that?
I saw a couple of times. I saw myself being worked on.
Okay.
And other times I was in another realm, or what do you want to call it?
Okay, yes. No, because I wanted to figure out how you relate to your body now then, you know, because I mean it must be something so special to look at your body. I'm trying to visualize seeing my body, you know.
Did it make you stop eat junk food? No.
Oh gosh, you know, junk food has a reason and a purpose and yeah. So now I just thought maybe you're like in awe of this garment. Thank you, Penny.
I don't think you look very good when you die.
No.
I don't think you want to go back there.
No, but I think that's a
If I can put it into my words, I think that mortality becomes very real. And a part of that is your body and how fragile we actually are.
Uh-huh. Karen, so now that you have spoken about your near-death experience, do you think you will tell more people about it? Because this was the first time you actually told other people.
Yes. That's right. I'm all for it, especially now that I heard what Penny said. You know, I didn't even realize I fell into a category.
So. Is that like what you're taking away from this? You're in a category.
Yes, I get to put another label on.
You know what? This is
no, it just feels good, you know, to be validated because, you know, deep down inside you always wonder, you know, maybe this wasn't real. Maybe it didn't happen.
So, listen, this is a first for both you and Penny, hey? We have been your first. Don't you forget that.
And I do hope you can both say that we were gentle with you.
Very gentle. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You didn't just go there, did you?
Well, Karen, thank you very much for sharing with us. Penny, your last thoughts on this death and dying thing?
It's not such a big, bad thing. It's part of life, and I don't know why we run away from it. We're all happy when somebody is born and there's birth and all of this, but death shouldn't be taboo. It shouldn't be the dirty secret in the family.
Mm.
You should celebrate the person's life and, you know, bring them back. They still are here. They're part of your family. They haven't just disappeared.
Part of your DNA.
Very much so, and they're part of who you are.
Liesl, how do you feel about death and...
I kind of see it very much like I see the birth of my children. It is a birth into another world. I am scared shitless of the pain, which you are also when you're pregnant. But focusing on that potential pain doesn't make it any less or help you in that situation. So how I see it is, yes, it's most likely going to be very painful. I will deal with it when I get there. But once it's over, once that pain is over, it is over forever, and then I'm in this new existence, whatever that might be.
When you speak about pain, which pain are you referring to, or what pain are you referring to?
How do people die?
Mm-hmm.
Buses hit them. It hurts.
Mm-hmm.
That's the, you know, that pain of the physically dying. That you know, like poor Karen who was in a fire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you imagine how painful that must be?
Do you know
that's
that?
A strange thing. Can I remark on that?
Oh yes, please. Yes, go ahead.
I do not remember, and that's the beauty of our minds. I mean, I basically choked or suffocated, and I can't remember anything about that.
I've also heard that even doctors say, you know, it's like even that hit. I mean, it's traumatic to think about it, but they say that hit, you don't feel it, you know.
No, you don't.
And some say I left. And then I got, I've heard people actually say, no, when I saw this thing going to happen, I left my body in that car.
Yes.
And when it was over, I came back into my body.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's maybe a little comfort for some people who go.
That is true. And it has been documented that they don't feel the pain. There is no pain at passing. It's the pain leading up to it. So if you're a dying cancer patient, it's that pain that you're worrying about, not the heart attack and how sore it's going to be.
And you, Shemaine?
What about me?
How do you see this death and dying thing?
It's a transition. I think it's traumatic, but I think you can get through it if you remember that it's part of a process.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a process. It's not the ultimate, you know. I see it together with me having been born, like you said. I see it together with adding onto my my next lifetime or my past lifetime. The only thing that disturbs me is I'm leaving my loved ones who will weep. Who will grieve, and I don't want to get them into that space.
But even for them, that's healing. They need
I have to say...
I prepared my kid for that. I was like...
I have to say, Shemaine and Palesa are saying we should finish
yes.
up, but I just want to say this.
Yes.
Because I saw it recently in a different situation. I saw intense pain and trauma, and you know, there was something extremely beautiful in there.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that whatever situation meant so much to that person that he's in this intense grief process showed there was big, huge, true love. Mm. And that, for me, that was the precious thing. Mm. Palesa's going to hit us. Let's say goodbye. Penny?
Thank you for being gentle.
Penny Wheeler.
And thank you for this opportunity. Really,
it was lovely to have you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Shemaine Harris. Thank you for joining us.
And I'm Liesl Tom. Take care of yourself. CliffCentral.com.